Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at Andrew Dominik and his 2007 Western, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Returning on the show today to talk about The Assassination of Jesse James, Professor Marie Westover. Professor Westover, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So, to me, I would say this film, you could definitely talk me down off of this, but it's, to me, it's flawless, or near perfect as a movie can be. Like, when I think of every aspect of this film, I think there's nothing I can say, well, that could have been done even just a little bit better. Everything's at 100%. It's not just the directing, but this is some of the best cinematography I've ever seen in a movie. The acting is great. It has one of my favorite scores in any movie. And, you know, I just like, you know, the Westerns. I'm always a big fan of that genre. So there's really nothing I can say, well, maybe that could have been done better. I just, everything to me is 100%.
I will agree with you, except I don't think it was perfect. Mm-hmm. Because there were a couple things that I did find that I thought could have been done better. One is that they make a point in the beginning of the movie of saying that Jesse James blinked very rapidly, that he had some sort of condition. And then Brad Pitt never does.
Yeah.
So why mention it? You know, I think they should have taken that out, or Brad Pitt should have blinked more. The other thing was that all of the principal actors, who were all absolutely fantastic, are all too old. I mean, Sam Shepard was in his 60s, yeah. and Brad Pitt's in his 40s, and they're playing guys in their 30s, and Casey Affleck is 30 playing a guy who's 20. They were all too old.
Mm-hmm. I will say movies kind of do that, where everybody's like, you know, they're a 40-year-old guy playing somebody who's 25.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And, you know, back in that day, too, because there wasn't as much metrosexualism, I guess you would say, everybody looked kind of old as soon as they hit adulthood. So there was that. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody was wearing those hats and long, greasy hair. And, you know, you looked old before your time. But still, it struck me when I was watching that, man, these guys are way too old to play these roles.
Sam Shepard was way too old. I will say that. He's like, you know, he was like 64 at the time that film was made. And he's supposed to be playing a guy who was like, you know, once again, in his mid-30s. And he does not look like a guy in his mid-30s. Looks like he doesn't look like Brad Pitt's brother. He looks like his dad.
I did think he was his dad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, it's absolutely beautifully shot. And one thing I wanted to know if you noticed, because I'm sure you've watched it more than once, is how the director or the cinematographer does a lot of those John Ford kind of shots through the doorways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of that.
A lot of that. And I don't know if this was a coincidence or if they did this on purpose as sort of a nudge and a wink, but a couple of times when they would show a shot like that, it would be right at the time that they could mention one of the Ford brothers' names.
So John Ford,
they actually say the word Ford.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. But yeah, I definitely think that's on purpose. That's definitely no coincidence, because this is also a Western, and that's one of the most famous shots of any movie in history, is the beginning and end of The Searchers when they're going through the doorway.
Yeah, he does it a couple. He frames things in doorways a couple of times. Well, I always liked it when John Ford did it. You know, there's something very pleasing about that composition.
And I would say, I was running down one of the last great Westerns. I think we've had some good ones after that. I really like the Coen brothers' version of True Grit. I thought that was great. I really like the last two films Tarantino has done, with Hateful Eight and Django Unchained. So those, but of all of those, I probably say this one is my favorite. I think this just gets the Western so right, and I think, well, all those other films are good. Don't get me wrong. I really like them. I would say this one is the best out of all of them. This is probably the last great one we've, like, classic. I would put this up with The Searchers, or The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, or the really classic Westerns.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's a wonderful, wonderfully shot movie. It does justice to the Western genre, and it has something a little bit different in that it's really a character study.
Mm-hmm. And it's really, I think the film has a lot to say about the West, too. Just, you know, I always kind of like these stories. My favorite Westerns are the ones that sort of show that this wasn't really as, you know, romantic and you know, heroic and adventurous as you think it is. And that's what it's addressing, because it's only looking at yes, it's the story of Jesse James, but this could be like anyone, like Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, Billy the Kid, all those, you know, famous Western guys that have been portrayed in a countless number of movies, Buffalo Bill, Wild Bill Hickok. all those guys were romanticized in dime novels and then later in like the old westerns from like the 30s and 40s. And we always think like, man, they were so awesome. And you realize, not so good.
When you see that train robbery, which is incredibly well shot, you get the real sense of how terrified everybody was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's because, you know, they were hiding in the woods and, you know, they put out their lanterns so they wouldn't be seen ahead of time. Just that they knew what was going to happen as soon as the train stopped and they were trapped. It was just it made you really see what they were doing. It also made you realize this is back in the time before you could pick up a phone and call 911. Mm-hmm. There were no phones and there wouldn't be anybody on the other end to pick up the phone and help you. So, you know, you really did have to protect yourself with guns.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting, I love that scene is incredible, and I love just the way Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, shoots that scene when the train's coming. We see just the flashes of light, and you mm-hmm. have the robbers and their masks behind, and then Jesse James is silhouetted with the lantern and his light, and he's standing right in the middle of the tracks, and like that whole sequence is just incredible. I mean,
but it does make you wonder why didn't they just run him over?
I thought they put something on the tracks to make
the train
stop.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I think they did block it, yeah. So that really wasn't an option.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's great about this movie is it only has a lot to say about the West, but a lot about just how we view celebrities, I think. Because Jesse James is a celebrity in this movie. Everybody knows him. Like, there's one of the guys say, people in Europe know two Americans, Mark Twain and Jesse James.
Mm-hmm.
And even, which is true, at this time, he was one of the most popular people in America. I think you could see through Robert Ford, he is worshiping this guy. He's, you know, he has that whole collection of the cheap dime novels. He's built him up in this mind as this, you know, Robin Hood hero, the guy who steals from the rich and gives to the poor. I think and even his, you know, people in his gang sort of hang around him and worship him and everything. And then when Ford kind of realizes that this guy isn't what he built him out to be, like he even gets upset when he joins in and everybody makes fun of Rob, he gets angry. He's like, how dare he not be the person I built him up to be? And I think that is what's great, because that, and then it's sort of that when he realizes that he wants to kill him.
It's that celebrity stalker thing. Mm-hmm. He has this image in his mind of how much they have in common. He's even made a list of all the things that they have in common. So he's thinking in some way hooking up with Jesse James is going to save him or vindicate him or open doors that are currently shut to him. And then when he realizes Jesse James is not any mm-hmm. of those things, then it just becomes a matter of, I have to destroy you now, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and I'll make the money off of it too. But it's also a little bit of payback. You know, I mean, he has been sort of smacked around and watched him beat people up and shoot people. And I think there is a sense to his character that he wants to see him get what he deserves, and he expects applause.
Because mm-hmm. even at the end, when he's talking to Zooey Deschanel at the end, he was saying, well, I didn't realize what it would have looked like to people. You know, he figured when he wanted to kill Jesse James, he's still having that image, like he'd be praised as this guy who helped get rid of a great menace to society. Mm-hmm. And then people realize, no, they really liked him, and they're like, you were a coward and a traitor.
Well, shooting somebody in the back is pretty cowardly.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a traitor because he made him think that he was his friend and then double-crossed mm-hmm. him.
I really like what this also film does. It shows after watching this film, I looked up a lot of stuff about Jesse James. He was pretty much like what he was in this movie. He wasn't the Robin Hood. He killed 17 people. He would, you know, and he was always portrayed like, oh, I'm just doing this for the Confederacy. You know, these people were unionists that destroyed the South during the Civil War, during Reconstruction, so this is payback. Like, no, he just wanted to get their money, and mm-hmm. if they messed with him, he'd kill them. And he was unstable. We're reading one of the first times Robert Ford met Jesse James. Robert Ford, it was during like almost like that scene when he puts the knife to the throat.
Which is a great scene. Casey mm-hmm. Affleck is so good in that scene.
And Jesse James is that guy who could just turn at any moment. You don't know if he's going to be like friendly or the next minute he's going to kill you or put a knife to your throat.
Which I think was part of the payback. It's like, because he did identify so much with Jesse James that he kind of used his own thing on him. Like, well, I'll get you to trust me. Mm-hmm. And then when you least expect it, that's when the hammer falls. Mm-hmm. Do you think he really saw him in the reflection on the glass of the painting?
In real life?
Yeah.
I don't think so. But the way they're building up that scene at the end, it's almost like they're like he knows he's going to kill him. And then he's when he's going that, well, doesn't that picture look dusty? He's like, I'm giving you your chance. You better use it now or I'm going to be the one that kills you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about the title, like it says, by the coward Robert Ford, it gives a very human portrayal of Robert Ford, especially at the end when it shows later his life after the assassination that, you know, he did feel a lot of regret. And this was also in the book that I read, which was based on a novel. He apparently worked on this small town, like in, I forget, somewhere in the Northwest. And he was considered a very loyal public figure at that town. He was very, you know, he was always helping people out and everything. It's sort of him turning his life around in a way where he was finally becoming a respectable person and not just some guy seeking glory or, you know, wanting to become a celebrity. And, of course, the horrible irony is that he gets assassinated by a guy who was delusional and figured, mm-hmm. I'm going to get this guy and I'll be rewarded for the payback for killing the man who killed Jesse James.
Right. Yeah. Now, the title, Brad Pitt insisted that stay that way.
Hmm.
He wanted that entire title.
I definitely agree because it's, you know, it's ironic because they say by the coward Robert mm-hmm. Ford and it makes you think, oh, they're going to make him look awful, but they really don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of sympathy. It's weird how it plays with your emotions because there's times when Jesse James is actually likable when he's with his kids and, mm-hmm. you know, you can see why he would have been, he was charming.
Yeah, and then once again, that's kind of why he got that celebrity because, yes, a lot of that was built up, but, you know, even the bit, you know, something like that image, there's got to be some bit of truth. Even if it's just a small bit, there's got to be some bit of truth. So when he has that sort of, what's the word, gregariousness, you know, where he is can be very generous to some people, that so people would latch onto that. And so even Robert Ford, so they can forget about everything else he's done, all the cold-blooded murders and everything. But isn't he kind of a, you know, they look at the other things, oh, he's such a great guy.
Yeah, But he's a great villain.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very similar to kind of the way you see a lot of modern gangster movies. Think of Goodfellas and like the Joe Pesci character. And there are a lot of times when you're cracking up when Joe Pesci's going on rants in Goodfellas. But then when he kills that guy just because he told him to go F himself, he kills them just for that. Or just other things where he can kill people just because it's a mild annoyance.
Yeah. Yeah, it is sort of, well, Joe Pesci's a whole different, that's a whole different episode of this show.
And just, we talked about it earlier, just what an amazing cast in this film. I'll have to
yes, and it. I love that James Carville was like the governor of Missouri.
Random.
That was so perfect.
Yeah.
And he looked like he would be mm-hmm. the guy. That was great. I really love Jeremy Renner. And I just saw him in Wind River.
Yeah,
and he was terrific in that.
He was great in that.
In a way, I think was sort of a frozen Western.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a Western, I would say, because it's out in the prairie. Yeah, it's a Native American like reservation or something,
yeah,
right?
And lawmen.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he's in Jeremy Renner's great.
Sam Rockwell is great. He has that great sort of craven lapdog kind of a role, which he's very good at.
Yeah. And you can see that in a lot of his other roles. Where, you know, he's a sort of... He feels a really pathetic in this movie, mm-hmm. especially at the end.
You can see he's got like maybe a little bit more smarts than his brother. And so he's trying to go along with Jesse James and trying to signal to his brother that, hey, laugh and go along with the joke because, you know, you're not reading him right.
The great scene in that movie, it's like right after they kill his cousin and Jesse James comes along and they're just trying to play it cool. Don't say anything stupid. He's trying, you know, he tells Jesse all the funny stories about Rob being, you know, being enamored with him, you know, and Rob's just getting really annoyed. And then Rob says that thing like, oh, your brother, your cousin came by a couple months later, but he's gone now. And then Rockwell's just like,
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, don't do it. Uh-huh. Don't do it. Yeah. It also has Paul Schneider in it, who we just saw from Lars and the Real Girl.
And he's a good character too, you know, starting that little feud. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if there's a star in this movie, as far as just what stands out the most, it's Roger Deakins in his cinematography. He's probably best known for doing a lot of the Coen Brothers films, Every film of those are beautifully shot. I mean, think of that, you know, opening scene in Fargo when it's the, you know, it has that score coming and all the police cars are driving by and it's the white haze distance of all the snow. That's great. True Grit, a Western, which he did like just a few years later after this movie, has more just beautiful shots. He did that. He did Shawshank Redemption.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Another beautifully shot film. He probably did the best shot James Bond movie in Skyfall. That's a lot of great cinematography. The guy's a legend. I think if there's one cinematographer you had to choose, it would be him.
I agree completely. And the cinematography in this movie is breathtaking. Mm-hmm. And it's in widescreen, too. So you really get that sense of vastness.
Yeah. And just one of the things I thought he was really brilliant in this film was the way he kind of blurred the corners in a lot of the scenes.
To look like old photos.
Look like old-timey photos. And I thought that was just beautiful. And like the point of that, I think, was just to, you know, like you can't see the full picture in this movie. Like you're not, you know, like a lot of time people didn't in those days didn't see the full picture of Jesse James.
That's very, very a cool way to put that.
Yeah. And I find, you know, he's been nominated 14 times for an Oscar and he's never won once.
He's going to get a Lifetime Achievement Award that will be too little too late.
I mean, because have you seen Blade Runner 2049?
Yes.
He shot that.
Gorgeous.
Amazingly shot film. And just come on, Academy. Academy, you've got a lot of problems, but.
Now, one thing you mentioned Robert Ford and how later in life he regretted what he had done and saw the implications and said things like, you know, I was 20, you know, I didn't know. But what was it? 800 reenactments.
Yes.
Of the murder.
That's we know crazy that you kill a guy and then you do a play on how you killed
him and make money off
to a huge sold out show.
Yeah,
I think at that, you know, because at that time he's enjoying the celebrity, he's getting that 15 minutes of fame that somebody would get, like the guy that shot Lennon, Mark David Chapman, like that guy, or the guy that tried to kill Reagan, or any of those guys. The people that try to kill celebrities, they get talked about for 15 minutes and then you go, who was that guy again? And I think that's what he's getting. He's getting the plays, and the narrator guy even says he was more recognizable to the American public than even the president of the United States.
Well, you mentioned the cult of celebrity that this exposes, which I think is interesting because I'd never thought about the fact that a young person might collect those dime novels and come up with this really romanticized idea, not running away to join the circus, but running away to join Jesse James and his gang. How that would seem really daring. To a young person. I hadn't thought about those dime novels, how that would have worked on the collective consciousness. But it did make me think we do have the Second Amendment in this country, and you can see why guns were the way to do things back in the day. But we still have this problem now where, you know, we've had several shootings recently. And I almost wish they wouldn't even tell you the guy's name.
Definitely.
Somehow cut off the incentive to be glorified for this.
It's always about why. I remember just going off a little bit unrelated, but when I was in the car dealership recently waiting for the car, they had on like Dr. Oz or something, like what went inside the killer's mind during Las Vegas? And it's stop giving that guy his 15 minutes
of fame. Exactly. In this case, though, I don't think Jesse James did it to be famous. But I think in the end, Robert Ford did do some things to be famous.
And even where it went, like the end of that film, when they're showing the other guy who's planning to kill it, he's wanting to do the same thing. He wants vengeance on Robert Ford. It's some misguided view that he killed Jesse James, so I'm going to get back at him.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just this never ending cycle.
It's
going
to be Jack Ruby.
Yeah. You know, and the beautiful shot film. And I think another thing I love a lot about this movie is the score by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. These guys were originally, a little background, these guys were originally Australian rock stars. They're in a band called, they're still touring, called Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. This was one of the, they started with another Western from Australia that I recommend called The Proposition. That was their first score. And so this is one of their other ones after that. And just what a great score. I kind of love it's sort of this melancholy, with this, just tiny little piano tunes mixed in with this very kind of sad violin. And I think it's great. It's one of my favorite scores.
Yeah, it goes really well with the scenery and the acting and the story. It's it's perfectly scored.
Yeah, and even at the end, probably the best score. No, I would say the best score is at the very beginning when we're introducing Jesse James, and I don't know what it's like a xylophone or something. It just has this very kind of almost feels like a dream, and it it blurs the corners, and it has the time lapse, and it even shows him out in the plain somewhere watching a fire. It's once again, incredibly shot, but that music really sets the tone well.
Yeah, it's great. It's great music and great scenery channel kind of stuff. You could freeze the frame and just frame it.
Yeah, and there's every frame in this movie is almost a painting.
Yeah.
Just you could hang it up and people would think, wow, what a great painting.
Yeah.
And actually, during Moore, he was influenced by the painting you've probably seen called Christina's World by Andrew Wyeth. It's for people who don't know, it's the painting of it's the girl who's out in the plains and
she's
sitting
on the grass.
Farmhouse.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe that also sort of influenced Terrence Malick, Days of Heaven. I can also see that.
It felt a lot like a Terrence Malick movie. Mm-hmm. Just that sort of epic scale and like a serious look at interactions between people. Mm-hmm.
If it was a Terrence Malick movie, there would be a lot of whispering.
That's true.
Whispering and a lot of nature porn, as I call it.
That is a really good way of putting it.
I guess now we could lead it to thoughts on, what do you – are you a fan of Westerns overall in particular?
I do like some Westerns very much. I love all the old ones with Jimmy Stewart in them, especially The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
That's my favorite Western. But, I like The Searchers, too. I like the old John Wayne movies because there's a certain, nostalgia that goes with them.
Innocence.
Yeah, innocence. Because, you watch it now, it's like, wow, that's – which just never fly now. You just could never make that movie now. Mm-hmm. But there's something honest about them.
Yeah.
And they do show a period of time, how people used to think even in the 50s where we've changed our minds. So it's always interesting to show those movies in class and then have the students react to them because it's not what they were expecting.
Yeah. I like the American Westerns and probably of all of them, I would probably say the Italian Westerns. Think of the ones with Clint Eastwood. Those are my all favorites. And if you look at the Western now, which is bizarre to me because think about how big this genre was. I mean, almost the first movie in America ever made, The Great Train Robbery, was a Western that shows you how old this genre spans and how big it was. Even it was so big, you even had a million different Westerns on TV, like Bonanza, Gunsmoke, Lone Ranger. And you look at it now, it's bizarre. When I was doing some research, I looked up 2017 Westerns. There's nothing big, no big budget. It's all these low budget independent movies that most of them probably never even get a release in theaters. Like, for example, one of the films I saw was it was called The Ballad of Lefty Brown, which is coming out this year, and it's got Bill Pullman in it, which when's the last time you have ever heard of Bill Pullman? And it's by A24, so it's very low budget. This was such a huge genre, and it's just sort of relegated, nobody really cares about it anymore.
I think of something like Hell or High Water as a modern Western. Mm-hmm. It's set in Texas, so, it sort of works. There's a string of robberies. They're all planned. There's unintentional and intentional murder and mayhem. There's chases, in cars, not horses. But it's that whole idea. I'm going to take the law into my own hands. And if possible, I'm going to use the law against itself.
So do you think that with your example of Hell or High Water that the Western is still a lot around, but it's always being updated and it's never going back to post-Civil War era where it's all just modern day, but we'll kind of set it like a Western. Because even Logan, I would say, it feels like a Western in a way.
It does. I agree with you. That's a really good question. But I think a lot of things are Westerns. I think Star Wars is a space Western. Mm-hmm. It's the same story. Yeah. A boy goes off, becomes a man, encounters all these difficulties, is out there in the wild.
And even that famous shot when Luke comes home and finds his family's been murdered, that's almost very similar to the shot in The Searchers when Ethan comes back and finds the family dead.
Yeah, exactly. And that was on purpose.
Yeah. I think a genre like the Western today, which is just getting so oversaturated where people are eventually going to get sick of it and eventually it'll be relegated to, like, you know, small indie films, not big budget, I think, are comic book movies.
You know, that's a good way of looking at it, because if you think about it, Jesse James is kind of like the first Marvel hero.
Yeah. And you even got Jeremy Renner in it, who's Hawkeye. And yeah, Sam Rockwell, right, who was in Iron Man 2.
So, not that much of a stretch.
Yeah, I think eventually people will get tired of comp movies, like they will get, like they have been getting tired of Westerns. And eventually it'll sort of just really wane off. And
but you can always come back with a fresh story, like the true story of the assassination of Jesse James by the coward
Robert Ford.
I mean, I hadn't heard that story before, even though I knew who Jesse James was. I'd never heard of Robert Ford. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who killed him.
Yeah, and it's interesting about Jesse James is even though they had this movie and the truths have come out, there's still people that, you know, adore him. I mean, think of like that one guy who was like on the, like a biker TV show whose name was Jesse James.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
There's even a football player who's plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers. His name is Jesse James. So you can still see people really like the guy even though stuff has come out about him.
I don't know if it's intentional, but my daughter has a friend whose name is Jessica James.
Maybe.
It's still Jesse James.
Yeah.
But that is, that name kind of, it flows.
Okay, so getting close to my questions. Is there anything else that you want to bring up?
You know, when I've talked about the Western in my American cinema class, I talk about how most of the Westerns are about loss in mm-hmm. some way. Something that has been gone and you're never going to get it back. And so I tell them to kind of look for that melancholy, because that seems to be the, you know, the common thread that goes through all of them.
How do your students react? Do they feel that the Western is old-fashioned and cliched, or do they enjoy the movies?
When I've shown The Searchers, they like the humor in it. But I think that they're very confused about how racist John Wayne is so plainly and unapologetically. Mm-hmm. Because we all know who John Wayne is, too, if mm-hmm. you've never seen one of his movies. So they go into the movie thinking he's going to be the good guy.
And he's not.
I say,
yeah,
you know, he really isn't the good guy. He's the guy, though, who always prevails. Mm-hmm. I mean, no matter what happens, John Wayne is okay
at the
end.
Yeah, which is interesting. They like the humor in the film because, for me, that was the weak part of the movie because they had all this, you know, the side story with Vera Miles in the love with
yes.
Ethan. That bore, like, kind of like, come on, can we move on to the actual story here and not have all this goofy kind of...
There's the young man who ends up maybe married to the squaw, and she follows him around, and he kicks her down the hill. And it's one of those things that wouldn't be...
Yeah, it wouldn't fly today.
It wouldn't fly today, but it does get kind of a nervous laugh when you show it in class.
Because I remember I watched that recently, in that scene when he kicks her, he would go,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, so... You've talked about it already, but tell us again about your classes, what you got.
I am teaching next semester American cinema and world cinema and intro to film. But I do want to mention that we have offered a Western cinema class, but I think it's only gone once.
Oh, okay.
So there doesn't seem to be enough interest in that as a specific course, which sort of surprises me.
You know, maybe just people feel that it's just not the genre for them because it's too cliched or whatever.
Or maybe they don't know enough about it to know that it's something they might enjoy, yeah. mm-hmm. and they think they already know. They've seen one, so they think they've seen them all.
Seen Blazing Saddles too many times.
That's a great Western spoof.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Andrew Dominik and his 2007 classic, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhave, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me back.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, by his own approximation, Bob assassinated Jesse James over 800 times. He suspected no one in history had so often or so publicly recapitulated an act of betrayal.